Rod's Pulse Podcast number 59, interview with podcaster Steve Lubetkin and Podsafe Kitaro.
This is Rod's Pulse Podcast, the podcast for faculty and students interested in learning how to use and create podcasts and other e-learning technologies. Welcome back. Hi, this is Rod. Welcome back. Happy New Year, everyone. This is my first podcast for 2008. That was some new wave music by Kitaro, one of my favorite new age composers. It's called As the Wind Blows, and it's from his CD called The Essential Kitaro. I found a new source for Podsafe music, and this is the first one I've played from IOTA PromoNet. This is a website which features music for podcasters and bloggers, and it's also a way for the general public to discover some new music. There are some unsigned bands, but like Kitaro, you have some very experienced musicians who have long histories with record companies, and they just want to promote some of their new work. So please enjoy the full song by Kitaro at the end of my podcast. Today I'm going to move right into my main topic and skip news from the podosphere today, since I do have a fairly long interview session. I interviewed Steve Lubetkin of Professional Podcasts. Steve is a very dynamic and experienced professional, and one of the first real professional podcasters that I've ever met. Hence, I've named my podcast today Steve Lubetkin, Podcaster Extraordinaire. He's making money at podcasting, but not necessarily doing a podcast, but showing other individuals and mostly businesses how to do podcasts. Steve Lubetkin is a technology-savvy veteran of more than 25 years in corporate and financial communications and print and broadcast journalism. He helped to lead successful media relations programs for two of the largest bank mergers of the last 5 years. As a communications counselor, he now offers senior executives his extensive experience in media relations, speech and testimony writing, seminar and conference planning, issues management, and crisis public relations. In December 2005, he completed a 3-year term as a member of the National Board of Directors of the Public Relations Society of America. He has also held senior-level public relations and communications management positions with Standard & Poor's, Unisys, and Conrail. He holds an MBA from the University of Phoenix online and a BA in Spanish and philosophy, a dual major from Monmouth College. So, like me, I think you'll get a lot out of his insights as a professional podcaster. He has a number of his own podcasts we'll be touching on, and we'll be talking about a number of topics related to producing a podcast, from audio tools, microphones, and so on. And I have links to all of these in my show notes. Just a side note, I recorded this on Skype, and unlike other interviews I've done, his voice sounds better than mine. I'm not sure what I did wrong, but probably need to tweak my microphone settings. I sound like I'm in a tunnel, so I've got a lot to learn, and Steve would be a great one to for all budding podcasters to pay attention to. So here we go. Thanks. What's your main business?
Well, the main business, Rod, is obviously the podcasting business. I spent about 25 years in corporate public relations, sitting on the inside of companies looking out. helping senior executives do their corporate communications functions, public relations, the media relations. But that career was the tail end of a career that started with a stint in commercial broadcasting. I did college radio when I was in college in my undergraduate work, and then went from there to commercial radio for about 5 years, doing broadcast news anchoring and broadcast production and engineering, and learned a lot about production of audio for broadcast. It was always one of my loves, but it's not a place where it's easy to make a living. So when I went into the public relations area, I always tried to integrate technologies, and particularly audio and video technologies, into the practice of public relations. And so when I left the corporate world at the end of 2004, actually, I was intending to open up a consulting practice focused on public relations. And I do still do some of that traditional work. But when I started getting into the social media and reading blogs and listening to podcasts, I immediately realized that this was kind of a world that I should be involved in. I have been involved in online since the 80s and even before that, but realized that what people were doing with podcasts was essentially producing long-form radio programming for the web and using internet technology to distribute it instead of sending it up over a transmitter and a tower to a limited audience in the area that could be reached by that radio station. The other thing that I noticed is that, frankly, there was a lot of what I would call amateurish production values in the podcasting world. And that's part of the charm for a lot of people, is that virtually anyone can be a broadcaster or a podcaster by just plugging a microphone into the computer. But for long form, for sustainable program content, I thought it was really important for the production values to be at least as good as what you get from the broadcast content producers. And if you look at, for example, the Apple iTunes Music Store, which since September of 2005 has allowed podcasters to put their podcasts in the store for people to download and sample at no cost, the top 100 podcasts in Apple's iTunes Store tend to be professionally produced content from the trusted brands in the media. You see high scores for NPR, New York Times, CBS News, ESPN. It's all professional content. And what that says to me is it sort of validates the premise that the content needs to have some production value. And so that's why we created professional podcasts and why we work with corporate clients and other professional clients to produce high-quality, entertaining, and well-produced, we hope, podcasts, both audio and video.
Yeah, you certainly have a quite a different background than I do, and I can understand why you would want to grab onto this this bandwagon. When you go to a company and wants to do podcasts, do you show them how to do it? Do you do it for them? How does that actually work?
We do it either way. I mean, there are some clients have indicated that they're interested in bringing the capabilities in-house, although most clients really don't want to do that because they're still not entirely sure that podcasting is something they want to make a long-term commitment to, which would involve, you know, having people in-house who know how to do it. So generally what we're doing is we're consulting with the clients about the content and the preparation of the podcast. We're doing all of the production work. For the most part, the clients are developing the content, the interview subjects. We work with them to structure it so that it doesn't sound stilted or artificial or too much like a commercial.
Right, right. Yeah, that's important. Am I right that you also do your own podcasts?
I do. I have three different podcasts, which I produce on sort of an occasional schedule. There are a number of people who are producing podcasts for their own account, if you will, who are very, very religious about getting them out on a set schedule. And I haven't been that disciplined about it. It's something that I do as the time permits. I have a podcast that we produce that focuses on the journalism, news, communications, and public relations communities. Sometimes it's interviews with people in those fields. Sometimes it's we present seminars and panels that people have put on. For example, the Public Relations Society of America's Philadelphia chapter, which I do some work with. We've produced podcasts of some of their panels, and they're very well attended. I mean, we get hundreds and hundreds of downloads from people who, for whatever reason, can't make it to the actual event. So we do that. The second one is called the CompuSchmooze podcast, and that one is a supplement to a monthly column I write for the Jewish Community Voice of Southern New Jersey. I've written the column since 1996, and we started the podcasts about the time that I started doing podcasts for clients. And basically what we're doing is taking the content of the column for that particular month and making it into a podcast by giving people the opportunity to hear the complete recorded interview with the subject of that particular column. So sometimes we're talking with software developers about a particular piece of software that I've reviewed for the column. Sometimes we're talking with people who have done something interesting in terms of intersecting technology with communications or with topics of interest to the Jewish community, since it is a Jewish newspaper, and things like that. The third podcast is an even more occasional podcast. I'm one of probably millions of people who have set up online bookstores as an associate of Amazon.com. And we call our bookstore the Middle Chamber Bookstore. We have a Middle Chamber Books podcast, and we interview book authors and creative artists and people like that.
Very interesting. Now, when I got started in doing this, I in doing my research, I decided to take advantage of a lot of the free software that was out there. I use Blogger for my show notes, and I use FeedBurner for the RSS feed. Can you tell us a little bit about, I guess, you know, are there different levels? Do you use something like that for your own podcast and do it a different way for commercial clients?
We use some of the free tools, but we also use some of the paid tools as well. The podcasts themselves are hosted on Liberated Syndication, and we do buy large quantities of capacity on Libsyn, which is not terribly expensive, but we do buy the capacity. What we found is, and because of my corporate experience, I've got an advantage in some ways over some of the other podcasters in communicating with the internal IT people at a corporate client, because they typically have concerns and questions about how the podcasting initiative is going to impact their network and their servers. And when we can, if I can talk to them in the language that makes them comfortable, that gives me an ability to get them on board rather than have them be, you know, a roadblock to the process, which can often happen. So we have ways of addressing their concerns effectively. And we use, you know, the same tools that other podcasters are using. In terms of the production of the podcasts, we use some free tools, but we also use some of the higher end tools. We have professional digital recorders and professional wireless microphones and things like that that we use when we go out to do a remote broadcast or a remote recording. And, you know, we're using digital hybrids for telephone calls. And we do use Skype for some of the calls. We do use the digital hybrid sometimes on a plain old telephone line. We prefer to record in person, obviously, and we can do that either in our studio or on location at the client's site.
What would you recommend for a novice in podcasting, perhaps an instructor who wants to start their own podcast? Can you recommend software and hardware for them?
Yeah, I think, you know, the most popular software tool is probably Audacity, which a lot of podcasters use, and frankly, we've used it, even though we have access to some of the higher-end recording tools that you would, you know, pay more money for. Because they have features beyond what we need for producing simple voice conversation podcasts. We can do most of the final mix down that we need to do in Audacity, so why not? We do take the sound out of Audacity and do some processing on it. As I said, with some of the tools, we sometimes use the free tools. There's a terrific tool called Levelator.
Yeah, I was going to mention
which,
that.
And I've had mixed results with it, but I've started to get comfortable with the results and the ability to tinker with it to get the right results. It doesn't have a lot of knobs on the program. In fact, it doesn't have any knobs on the program, but if you know how to set up the file before you take it into Levelator, you can actually get quite good results out of it, and it's very nice to have nice even levels across the board. It's in some circumstances better than doing dynamic compression, but there are some times when we compare the results between the Levelator program and the paid compression tools that we have access to, and we go with the paid tools because they do a better job. Same thing with noise reduction. There's some very rudimentary noise reduction capabilities in Audacity. We've chosen to go with some of the higher end tools because we're producing for corporate clients. We want it to sound really top notch, and the results we think speak for themselves. The clients seem to be happy with what we're doing. Mm-hmm. In terms of entry level hardware. For someone just starting out, one of the things you could consider is there are some very, very good quality Sony and Olympus handheld stereo digital recorders, and the entry-level prices of those have gone down under the $200 mark. And you can do some very respectable recordings. I've done some of my early podcasts on an early Olympus, the DS2, which only records in stereo for about 2 hours and 15 minutes. And I've done some very long recordings on that, which actually sounded quite good with very little post-processing. It's a lot easier to carry than some of the more sophisticated equipment, but again, it depends on your needs.
Yeah, would you use their built-in microphones, or would you still use that with the more professional
microphones? You can. The Olympus that I've had experience with has built-in microphones, and it does a very respectable job of not only recording well, but also giving good stereo separation. So in a pinch, you can stick that on a table in front of a panel of four people and get a very nice stereo spread and hear everybody quite clearly. If you try to mic something like that with a single mono microphone, the sound's going to be a bit more muddy, and it may not be as easy for someone wearing headphones to hear what's being said. So we like to use a stereo spread when we have that many people.
Right, right. I know my audience may remember I've talked about my evolution of my microphones. You know, I started out with a pretty cheap Radio Shack headset mic and went from that to a slightly more expensive Audio Technica mic, and then I found one which I really like. It's the Samsung has one which is a dynamic condenser mic that's actually powered by the USB port. So you plug it into the USB port on your laptop, and I've been pretty happy with that sound. That's what I've been using to date. My audience also probably remembers me talking about Cast Blaster. That's software that Adam Curry, one of his companies, put together, and it's more oriented to what his needs were, which, you know, he puts together his podcast almost like a live radio show, and he doesn't do hardly any editing, but I like it because it enables me to sort of gather all my little audio clips together and put them together in sequence and make the final recording. And the other handy thing it does, it handles all the tags very nicely for to support iTunes and whatnot. It does have its drawbacks. For example, it has very rudimentary editing. In fact, I wouldn't use it to edit at all. I'd probably if I do record something in Cast Blaster and I do have to edit, I'll go back to Audacity. I think for a novice, Audacity can be somewhat daunting. Do you know of any software packages that would help a novice podcaster sort of be able to put together their final product?
Along the lines of the Cast Blaster program, I actually looked at that. There is another one that's quite similar called Podcast Station. And I liked that one because it was designed by a company as almost a subset of their professional broadcast version. It's like a production studio for a radio station. And so it has buttons that work as if they were tape decks, and it has buttons that work as if they were the tape cartridge machines that those of us who grew up in radio in the 60s and 70s remember were used to play station jingles and promos and commercials. And you can infinitely edit your audio and then, you know, assign it to these different buttons on the control panel to do very much what you just described, to put together a show and do it live. And I've used that for a couple of podcasts. I did a podcast about a year ago. I had gone on a trip to the Philippines to speak to the Public Relations Society of the Philippines. And one of the other speakers on the panel was a fairly legendary Filipino journalist. He had been a resistance fighter during World War II and had covered every major conflict and war in Southeast Asia, beginning with French Indochina and going right on up through the present day. He gave a fascinating talk, which I recorded. And sadly, about 2 months after the conference, he died of a massive heart attack while he was on a business trip to Japan. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to put together a tribute podcast with excerpts from his remarks filtered in. And what I did was edit up his speech in Podcast Station into audio clips and then introduce each clip and explain what he was talking about. And it made for a much faster paced program. But it also challenged me to go back to my live radio roots, because when you're doing, as you well know, a recorded podcast, the pressure's off. You don't have the same kind of, I got to push these buttons in the right sequence kind of pressure that you have when you're doing it live.
Do you find that you do much post-editing? Do you... I'm still at the point where I have a lot of ums and ahs. What's your philosophy on doing, editing after the fact?
For the corporate clients, I do quite a lot of editing. Many of the clients, they really expect that. They want the people to sound coherent and knowledgeable and not have a lot of hesitation in their presentation. And frankly, it sounds relatively natural. It's a lot easier to listen to when people are not hesitating and verbally breaking up the sentence with ums and ahs, so I don't have as big a problem taking it out. In my own podcast, I don't probably do it as much as that, but I also do tend to script my intros and outros. I don't tend to try to do them off the top of my head unless I'm in a real hurry. So we do. It's a lot more of a prepared show. And again, there's two schools of thought on that, and the prevailing school of thought among most of the amateur podcasters seems to be let the warts hang out, and you know, it's supposed to have the charm of being a less than professional job. Uh-huh. And I just that's kind of where I part ways with the podcasting community. Is it's a radio program, it is a recorded program, it's not a live program, and therefore it's perfectly legitimate for you to edit out the mistakes. And why wouldn't you want to put your best foot forward?
That's right. Yeah, it depends, I guess, on how much time and effort and you know, how big your audience is and so on. I remember, I don't know how many months ago now, maybe 6 months ago, NPR, I also listened to On the Media, which is, I find, a
sure.
fascinating program. And they did a segment talking about this and how much they edit. You know, the casual listener would think, gee, you know, they really sound good, and, you know, they have no idea how much editing they put into that program. You know, the interviewer has its own ahs and ums and stumbles, and they must put a lot of time into editing the final product.
I do a lot of speaking to communication students, sometimes at the undergraduate level, sometimes at the graduate level. And I always mention to them that there's a podcaster and broadcaster in Canada whose name is Todd Maffin. He works with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and he also does several podcasts. And he's written a book designed primarily for freelance radio producers to be more effective at pitching their stories to public radio. And it has a number of different tips for how to prepare your audio for radio, long-form radio programming. But he also did an adapted version for podcasters. And one of the biggest takeaways I got from that was the concept of recording what he calls room tone. And what room tone is simply recording the ambient sound of the location where you're doing the podcast from. Uh-huh. so that when you go back to the studio and you record your intros and outros or your bridges between segments, you lay in a little bit of that room tone underneath your narrative so that it sounds continuous. There's not the jarring audio break from the live recording to the studio recording. And in fact, this is a very standard technique in NPR broadcast production. And when I tell people this, they're like horrified that this is going on. And yet it's been, you know, for years, it's been a standard radio technique. And no one ever challenges, for example, you know, 60 Minutes or 2020 when they do what in the business are known as the reverse shots, which is after they've interviewed, General Musharraf, they sit for 10 minutes taking pictures of the face of the reporter reacting to questions or reacting to answers. And then they cut that in to make it look like there were two cameras in the room.
Right.
And that's considered a perfectly legitimate technique. Yeah. So what you're trying to do is achieve a continuity and achieve a sense of it's one single continuous program that you're listening to. And you know, I don't have a problem with that. Not only do I not have a problem with it, I really encourage people to think in those terms, because it sounds, if it's easier for your audience to listen to, and you said a minute ago, you know, it depends on how large your audience is, whether you're going to put in the time to edit. I would turn that around, Rod, the other direction, and say, if you want to grow your audience, you want to give them something that is easy to listen to.
Right. Right.
Or entertaining to listen to. And the way you do that is by eliminating the things that are stumbling blocks for people when they're listening to the program. I listened to one podcast very early on, and I don't remember the topic, but the person was doing a fabulous job with the content. The content was very interesting, but halfway through the program, she stopped and said, "Honey, please be quiet. I'm doing my podcast now." And that was left in the program. Now, it may have been a mistake that it was left in, but it was very jarring to me and made me almost not want to, you know, listen to the program, because that's that can come out.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm very, you know, adamant on these points, and some people disagree with me. They think that it should be, you know, warts and all. It's sort of like when word processors first got the ability to change the font that you put on the paper, all of a sudden a memo that was normally typed with one font suddenly had 14 different fonts in it because people could.
Right, right.
And that's sort of the same thing that we're at the same stage with podcasting, I think. People are trying out the effects. They're doing the special things. You know, some of it works and some of it doesn't.
Uh-huh.
For example, I mean, I can go into, I don't know if this is going to work, but let me see if this will work. I have this program that I use for recording my Skype calls that's called Pamela, and it's got built into it an emotions sound player.
Uh-huh.
And you can play sounds to indicate to people exactly how they feel about the content.
Uh-huh.
And so I heard that.
Well, that's funny, because I was going to ask you what you use to record your Skype. I think some of my audience might be interested at this level. I use something called Hot Recorder. It also has some sound effects.
Here's my applause.
So that's about it for today. I think you'll be hearing more from Steve on a future podcast of mine. So I hope you enjoyed it, and don't forget to stay tuned and listen to the Kitaro piece. Until next time, have a great week.
Please leave odd feedback at 610-616-2199. Thank you.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Please don't forget to leave Rod feedback. You can go to www.rodspulsepodcast.com and leave comments on his blog. You can send feedback to his email address, rod@rodspulsepodcast.com. You can also send audio feedback by calling into his comment line at 610-616-2199. Till next time, have a great week.
The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rod Numeri, and does not represent the official viewpoint of Thomas Jefferson University, or any other institution or company.